All stations, all stations, all call signs. This is Wrecker Actual, over. Stand by for transmission. Prepare to copy. This is American Vindicta. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 137 of the American Vindicta Show. I'm your host, Doug Thornton, and today we are going to pick up a little bit of where we left off, and we're going to continue to pursue the myth, the lore, and the legends of giants in America. Let's start this off with a good quote. On the earth, there were once giants. Homer, Greek poet, 400 BC. Throughout history, there have been tales, lore, and legends of a mythical race of giants that once roamed the earth. The skeletal remains of the gigantic people have been found in and throughout North and South America, and has been found in newspaper articles dating back to 1705 all the way to the 20th century. There are reports of gigantic beings from nearly every continent that is kept alive in folklore, but as we know, much of the art of telling the tale had to come from witness statements, either by first, second, or third-hand testimony. The First Nations people of North America keep their traditions of historical accounts alive by the oral narrations of their lore and their legends. Yet, with all the reports of dozens and dozens of first-page news headliners that have the similar phrase, giant skeleton, and all the oral accounts of history by our First Nations tribes and other people around the world, there are still the holdouts in fields of historians, archaeologists, and anthropologists at the university levels that will still hotly debate these accounts or just plain write them off as fairy tales and myths. I would love to sit down tribal elders and these lettered PhDs, and I mean PhDs of history, and I dare them to go against the tribe's oral history. As we now live in a very woke America, I would love to watch the tennis match of lore versus, quote, historical truths be waged on a live platform. Can't you just hear the leftist people calling the PhDs white supremacists and whitewashing history? Talk about using the left's radicalness against themselves with an effort, hopefully, of forcing at least one historian, one anthropologist, or at least one archaeologist to backtrack and admit that the giant skeletons were here in America. Could these subject matter experts, which would also include their universities and museums, be put under enough pressure to finally squeeze out a bit of truth? Could we call upon the esteemed members of Congress, who is now all about launching massive woke investigations and pins almost anything of our historical importance as racist, could they be pressured into launching a historical investigation for the sake of keeping our First Nations people's legends and lore alive? Was it the Trail of Tears bad enough? Not only were they removed forcefully from their lands, but their tribal history was also forced to follow the white man's warpath. What a shame, indeed, to us all, when we lose any bit of our ancestral heritage and our history. I'm being deceitfully sarcastic here, and I know that, but my intentions and methods are different. I think we could use the court of public opinion that was willing to set fire to every major city across America over the death of a felon to stir up the Archaeological Society or maybe even the great Smithsonian Museum and force them to conform to the public shame and outcry of covering up and tampering with the history, or even forcing them to expose the sins of destroying the First Nations people's artifacts in the sake of preserving their own Darwinian evolutionary theory and talking points. What crimes against humanity are there, potentially hidden within the past, that we have not uncovered yet? What trouble could we stir up? Surely not as damaging and costly financially as the BLM riots of 2020. But just imagine the historical sins that could be righted for forcing the elites of history to speak the truth about giant skeletal remains that have been reportedly found across the nations and primarily on Native burial grounds. Maybe it's time we fight fire with fire. I would dare say that many of us Christians understand the true significance of what I'm trying to do here. If we can use the woke mob to attack their own scholars and force them to finally reveal elements of the truth about the giants that were in America, to we the people, if we can expose the sins of the leaders, as Steve Quayle has said so many times, then we can also attack their Darwinian evolutionary theory and show the world that the accounts of giants that were mentioned in the Bible are also linked to the same strange race of giants that are rooted in Native lore and the archaeological surveys of the past here in America. Thus, proving the accounts of the Bible to millions of non-believers, to include those of the academic fields, and hopefully, God willing, expose them to the light of our Savior, Jesus. Sounds like a long shot, I know, but it's a shot across the bow of hidden history that was purposely covered up for a reason. It's time. It's time to bring what was done in the dark to light. It's time to excavate the truth and force the elites of history to display the facts of Genesis 6, verse 4. There were giants in the earth in those days and also after that. When the sons of God came in unto the daughters of men, and they bare children to them, the same became the mighty men which were of old, men of renown. Now, let's take these things into the context that the Bible was describing, and let's see if evidence can fit the lore. And once again, the evidence that we're looking for are the biblical statements made in our history, proving the Bible as true, and we can relate these things to topics, discussions, evidence, and other type of historical data that's found across the world. So that's what I intend to do. Now, I'm going to read to you a few verses, and these are going to describe just how many accounts there were within the Old Testament of giants that are mentioned in the Bible. So, we've already mentioned Genesis 6 verse 4. Let's go to Numbers 13, verse 33. And there we saw the giants, the sons of Anak, which come of the giants, and we were in our own sight as grasshoppers, and so we were in their sight. Deuteronomy chapter 1, verse 28. Whither shall we go up? Our brethren have discouraged our hearts, saying, the people is greater and taller than we. The cities are great and walled up to heaven. And moreover, we have seen the sons of the Anakim there. Deuteronomy chapter 2, verse 11. Which also were accounted giants as the Anakim, but the Moabites call them the Emims. Deuteronomy chapter 2, verse 20. That also was accounted a land of giants. Giants dwelt therein in old time, and the Ammonites call them the Zamzummans. Deuteronomy chapter 2, verse 21. A people great and many and tall as the Anakims, but the Lord destroyed them before them, and they succeeded them and dwelt in their stead. Deuteronomy chapter 3, verse 11. For only Og, king of Bashan, remained of the remnant of giants. Behold, his bedstead was a bedstead of iron. Is it not in Rabbath of the children of Ammon? 9 cubits was the length thereof, and 4 cubits the breadth of it, after the cubit of a man. Deuteronomy chapter 3, verse 13. And the rest of Gilead and all Bashan, being the kingdom of Og, I gave unto the half tribe of Manasseh, all the region of Argob, with all Bashan, which was called the land of giants. Joshua chapter 13, verse 12. All the kingdom of Og in Bashan, which reigned in Ashtaroth and in Edrei, who remained of the remnant of the giants, for these did Moses smite and cast them out. Joshua chapter 15, verse 8. And the border went up by the valley of the son of Hinnom, unto the south side of the Jebusite, the same as Jerusalem. And the border went up to the top of the mountain that lieth before the valley of Hinnom westward, which is at the end of the valley of the giants northward. Joshua chapter 17, verse 15. And Joshua answered them, if thou be a great people, then get thee up to the wood country, and cut down for thyself therein the land of the Perizzites and of the giants, if Mount Ephraim be too narrow for thee. Joshua chapter 18, verse 16. And the border came down to the end of the mountain that lieth before the valley of the son of Hinnom, and which is in the valley of the giants on the north, and descended to the valley of Hinnom, to the side of Jebusai on the south, and descended to Enrogel. Isaiah chapter 13, verse 3. I give command, and I bring them. Giants are coming to fulfill my wrath, rejoicing at the same time, insulting. What's honestly astonishing to me, being an amateur historian that I am, is that I can go through this thing called the internet, and I can find article after article, newspaper, magazine, historical context, and I can vet out many different resources. I can vet out many different myths and lore and legends. And I can find across the world how many accounts publicly there are of giant beings that roamed the land and dealt disastrous blows to the human populations, typically within the history of antiquity. What we found was this giant race, no matter where it was, either being within the time frame of the biblical narrative that the Israelites had to fight against, or being in South America, being throughout Europe, North America, Central America, wherever they seemed to have been, the giants brought with them a lust for violence and blood. The giants always seemed to be the imposers of a dictatorial rule over mankind. No matter what saga you read, we hear time and time again of knights having to fight giant cyclops. We know within the tales of Homer of the cannibalistic cyclops. And there's also a cannibalistic cyclops lore that has to do with Ireland as well. You can go to many different countries across the world and just type in the reference of giants and myths, and you will be shocked and surprised at what you find. And once again, as always, I implore you, do your research for yourself. Not just the fact that you need to fact check what I'm saying, because I implore people to. However, educate yourself. Do your own investigative research, and you may just find you like what you see. You may just find that you like to continue the pursuit of knowledge of history. Woe unto anyone who refuses to make good upon the acts of history. There are so many examples throughout history that can benefit mankind here in our present day and in our future. But if we continuously erode and degrade what history was really like, then eventually, when these things that were in the past come back to life, men's hearts may fail them for fear of what is coming back upon the earth. Stick around. We're going to go to a break. We'll be right back.
Klaus Schwab from the World Economic Forum has said, "You will own nothing and you will love it." And that's represented by what's going on across the planet today, where the economy of the world is in free fall. And nowhere is it more in evidence than with our own President Biden deliberately trying to sabotage what we have. Access to food, other resources. So Americans are in a unique position, really for the first time in our history. We're going to have to provide for ourselves or subject ourselves to the whim of the government. Do you really trust a government to feed you that left 1,000 Americans behind enemy lines in Afghanistan? I don't think so. So where do you go? When you ask the question, who's the best prepper out there today? There's only one answer. Ready Made Resources and Robert Griswold. I call him King Prepper, and that's how a lot of people think of him. You have everything there you'd want, from night vision to storable food, how to prepare cooking in emergency situations, books and videos on how to prepare alternative energy, communication, first aid that you wouldn't think of, natural antibiotics, you name it, Bob has it. Now, here's the good thing about Bob Griswold that no one else does but him. You don't have to buy anything to talk to him. If you're not sure where to start with your preparation, no obligation phone call directly to Bob. You can talk to him for free. Most people will charge you an arm and a leg for a half-hour conversation. That's not Bob Griswold. He cares about helping America get prepared. Go to readymaderesources.com or you can call the number directly at 800-627-3809. Again, that contact information, readymaderesources.com for the best prepping outfit in the country, or call Bob Griswold directly, 800-627-3809.
Welcome back to American Vindicta. Let's get back into this topic of giants. Finally, we have the writings of an ancient historian named Titus Flavius Josephus. Born in 37 BC, died in 100 AD. He was a first century Romano-Jewish scholar, a historian, a hagiographer, and he was born in Jerusalem and then part of Roman Judea to a father of a priestly descent and a mother who claimed royal ancestry. Josephus recorded Jewish history with special emphasis on the first century and the first Jewish-Roman war, including the siege of Masada. His most important works were the Jewish War, 75 AD, and Antiquities of the Jews, 94 AD. The Jewish War recounts the Jewish revolt against Roman occupation in 66 to 70 AD. Antiquities of the Jews recounts the history of the world from a Jewish perspective for an ostensibly Roman audience. These works provide valuable insight into first century Judaism and the background of early Christianity. In his writings, Josephus, an ancient historian, references ancient giants in several different places, for which reason they removed their camp to Hebron. And when they had taken it, they slew all the inhabitants. There were still then left the race of giants, who had bodies so large and countenances so entirely different from other men that they were surprising to the sight and terrible to the hearing. These bones of these men are still shown to this very day, unlike to any credible relations of other men. They had a man who was 6 cubits tall and had on each of his feet and hands more toe and finger than men naturally have. Now the person who was sent against them by David out of his army was Jonathan, the son of Shimea, who fought this man in a single combat and slew him. And as he was the person who gave the turn to the battle, he gained the greatest reputation for courage therein. This man also vaunted himself to be of the sons of the giants. But after this fight, the Philistines made war no more against the Israelites. For many angels of God accompanied with women and begat sons that proved unjust and despisers of all that was good on account of the confidence they had in their own strength. For the tradition is that these men did what resembled the acts of those whom the Grecians call giants. Then the army of the Assyrians came up upon them, under their commanders Amraphel, Arioch, Shodor Lamor, and Tidal. These kings had laid waste all Syria and overthrown the offspring of the giants. The cities were strong with walls, and their firm fortifications round about them. They told them also that they found at Hebron the posterity of the giants. Accordingly, these spies who had seen the land of Canaan, when they perceived that all these difficulties were greater there than any they had met with when they since came out of Egypt, they were affrighted at themselves, and endeavored to affright the multitude also. A little afterward, the king made war against the Philistines, and when he had joined the battle with them, and put them to flight, he was left alone. He was in pursuit of them, and when he was quite tired down, he was seen by one of the enemy. His name was Achmon, the son of Araf. He was one of the sons of the giants. He had a spear, the handle of which weighed 300 shekels, and a breastplate of chainwork and a sword. He turned back and ran violently to slay their enemy's king, for he was quite tired out with labor. But Abishai, Joab's brother, appeared on the sudden and protected the king with his shield as he lay down and slew the enemy. When the king heard that the Philistines were gathered together at the city of Gazara, he sent an army against them. When Sibachai the Hittite, one of David's most courageous men, behaved himself so as to deserve great commendation, for he slew many of those that bragged that they were the posterity of the giants, and vaunted themselves highly on that account, and thereby was the occasion of victory to the Hebrews. Thus, these are the accounts, the amazing lore and legend of our history. I dare the historians to gather up their experts as we gather up those, the subject matter experts of the storytelling, of the lores and legends, and we pit them against one another. Because there are more historical accounts that giants existed than there are data driven by scientists in the field that giants did not exist. That is the facts that we have to deal with. Historical data versus historical lore, legends, and myths. Which one do you believe is true? Which one are we supposed to give the most credibility to? I come from a family of storytellers. And many of us have the gift of narration. But what is lost amongst our young people today is that auditory gift of storytelling. Hopefully with what you have learned so far, you can give the gift of what I have just given unto you to others, to educate others, that there are still things that are out there that are unexplained, unaccounted for, and sometimes not allowed to be questioned. But who is it that would not allow us to question history? What endeavor is there to keep history covered up and covered over? What is it that they're trying to hide? I think personally, the accounts of giants throughout the world will help to unravel the very loose knot of Darwinian evolution. We can tell right now that the world is speeding up, education is growing substantially, people are able to go to and fro and pass intelligence back and forth to one another, as the Old Testament would tell us was going to happen. But answer me this. We live in a world that is filled full of lush technological achievements. We have the ability, supposedly, to date back how long dinosaurs were. We can look at the bones, we can look at sediment, we can look at carbon dating, radio dating, and we can then verify, according to the experts, how old something is. But when you question what the experts say, what do you think happens? Well, it's reported that if you question the status quo, the SME, the subject matter experts, will then go on a crusade to defraud you, defame you, to deny you, and to demonize you. Which tells me that they're afraid of something. It tells me that when you have scientists who have made a career of 20, 30, 40, 50 some odd years sometimes of speaking the same language over and over again, if you question their career, their life's goal, and right there at the end, if you can unravel it, then is it that these men and women think that everything that they've done, that they've studied, that they've published, that they've become famous for, is now for naught because it's found to be questionable or untrue? Much like the differences within the scientific theories of string theory and all the other little theories that are out there, or the multiverses. When these things come out, when every couple of generations a new breed of scientists and explorers are produced in the world, and then they can help with more advances in technology that help you to gather more historical data, they can then unravel the mysteries and the clues of our past. Well, what they end up doing is they also end up unraveling the works of many of the PhDs and many of the scientists and historians, archaeologists, anthropologists, the zoologists, then you have the paleontologists that came before them. Many of them who got it wrong. Their whole career is now at stake. And many of them will kill you, will bankrupt you, sue you into oblivion if you dare question the narrative that they penned and got their PhD for. I understand it, protecting their careers. But what they do is they damage the economy of history that we have. And as you may or may not notice, along with the current economy that we have, the economy of history, the ability to share history, to use it as a ability to exchange historical data back and forth, is at risk right now. It's at risk because we have a group of elitist people who want to tell you that what is good is now evil, and that what is evil is now good. What is the end goal? I believe, and probably many others, I believe that the end goal is to deceive as many as possible. As the Bible tells us, though, be ye not deceived. That's one of the goals that I have with the American Vindicta show. I want to be able to give you history that you can then weaponize and implant that into the brains of our young people. They're the future. It is our job, it is our goal to educate the young so that whenever the time for testing comes, hopefully, if we teach them well enough, they won't be deceived. Just think of how many Christians right now are already deceived. How many Christians right now will almost go to blows with one another over their doctrine? Everything that Satan has been doing for thousands of years to corrupt the minds of the people, to spin you off in different directions, to give you half-truths and full lies, is being done to deceive the end time people. It's being done so that whenever the man of sin comes, you will believe that he really is the Messiah. You will believe that the Antichrist is Christ returned. Many will be deceived. And we are told that throughout biblical prophecy. So every chance we get to expose one lie, hopefully, can save the lives and souls of many others. That's my goal. I hope that's your goal. I hope that what I have laid today as a foundation, that sets you upon a journey, a quest, your own saga, of exploring history, of recounting the tales, of enjoying the stories, and exposing the lies of current, present-day academia. They cannot discount historical facts, but they can muddy the water. They can take the textbooks and burn them, as Nazi Germany did. We have to preserve the richness of human ancestry. We have to preserve our history. If not, we are going to be doomed to repeat it. Why do I make such a far-reaching grasp at the dried fruits of our history? Well, much like our dried and preserved foods of today, add just a little bit of life-bringing water, and you can enjoy the savory fruits and meats even more. So what I am trying to bring is that life-giving water, which is our Lord Jesus, to the dried stalks of the vineyards of history. This is all done with the effort of glorifying our God and our Savior Jesus. Remember these verses, because if we do not uncover the truth of history, we will be doomed to repeat it and lose many citizens of heaven. 1 Samuel chapter 17, verse 32 says this: "And David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail because of him. Thy servant will go and fight with this Philistine." Let no man's hearts fail them because of him, as the verse tells us. Who is him? He's speaking of Goliath, the giant Philistine of Gath. And don't forget, when young David went down to the river to collect some smooth stones for his sling, he grabbed five. One for Goliath, and the others were meant for his brothers. So, with that being said, remember this verse as well from Luke chapter 21, verse 26. Men's hearts will fail them for fear and for looking upon those things which are coming on the earth, for the powers of heaven shall be shaken. All right. So, now to switch gears and to get back into the giants of North America. Let's talk about the giants in West Virginia. This article is coming to us from legendsofamerica.com. I couldn't find the author, so thank you to whoever wrote this. I love reading stuff like this in history. It's so rich to read this. In many of the ancient burial mounds of West Virginia, several giants were found in years past. Other large skeletons were found in the early days of coal mining, and more were found as people were excavating the ground for other purposes. One of the first reports of a giant occurred in 1774 when Jack Parsons was walking along the recently flooded Cheat River. When he noticed some bones protruding from the ground, he pulled a femur from the soil, and when he compared it to his own, it was 7 inches longer. He then removed the rest of the bones and laid them out, estimating that it would have stood about 8 feet tall. Other settlers also found gigantic skeletons in the area, which was soon dubbed Giant Town. In 1838, when amateurs excavated the Grave Creek Mound in present-day Moundsville, West Virginia, they were said to have found giant human skeletons inside that were also as long as 8 feet. in the 1850s, a root cellar was being dug in Palatine, east of Fairmont, West Virginia. Here, workers uncovered two very large human skeletons, said to have been more than 7 feet tall. Several people saw these skeletons, but that night, the bones were stolen, assumed to be sold on in the lucrative market of, quote, Indian relics, which existed at the time. In 1857, the Western Literary Messenger reported that the skeleton of a giant had been found, stating, "A day or two since, some workmen engaged in subsoiling the grounds of Sheriff Wickham at his vineyard in East Wheeling came across a human skeleton. Although much decayed, there is little difficulty in identifying it by placing the bones, which could not have been belong to other than a human body, in their original position. The impression made from the skeleton itself was measured by the sheriff and a brother in the craft local, both of whom were prepared to swear that it was 10 foot 9 inches in length. Its jaws and teeth were almost as large as those of a horse. The bones are to be seen at the sheriff's office." That was 1857. In 1857, here again, when workers were constructing a bridge near Pawpaw Creek's mouth at Rivesville, they uncovered three giant skeletons with strands of reddish hair clinging to their skulls. Have you ever heard of this? The red-haired giants? Well, let's continue. A local doctor was called to examine the remains, who determined that they were human and estimated that the skeletons were approximately 8 feet tall. Afterward, with exposure to the air, the bones deteriorated rapidly. In 1882, amateur archaeologist F.M. Fetty and his wife were exploring an unusual rock formation along White Day Creek in Marion County when they found what to appeared to have been a shelter. On closer examination, they discovered that a false wall had been erected, and after removing several large stones, they found a huge ancient mummy sitting in a chair. The giant was surrounded by stone and flint artifacts. In the summer of 1883, James A. Faulkner unearthed a gigantic human skeleton in the same area. Dr. Samuel Kramer of Smithtown was called and measured this very skeleton, which was found to be 7 foot 4 inches long, and deduced that it belonged to a person who was almost 8 feet tall. That same year, the Smithsonian Institution dispatched a team of archaeologists to the Kyle Mound in South Charleston. Led by Colonel Lewis Morris, the team conducted extensive digs of some 50 mounds in the area and issued a detailed report. In their investigation, the team uncovered numerous giants, one of which was 7 foot 6 inches tall and decorated with six heavy copper bracelets on each wrist. And on his shoulder were three large plates of mica. In another mound, they found a circle of 10 skeletons surrounding a giant skeleton, as well as underground vaults, various copper and mica ornaments, jewelry, religious items, pipes, and spearheads. Another giant skeleton was also found that had a flat head type skull. As more digs progressed in the coming years, Archaeologists in Wheeling, West Virginia, found another group of giants ranging in height from 6 foot seven to 7 foot six, displaying unusual skull formations with low foreheads and prominent backs of the skull. Sounds to me like elongated skulls. Let's continue. As similar discoveries were unearthed, the Charleston Daily Mail published an article in October 1922 that states, "One of the most interesting of the five state parks is Mound Park at Moundsville, which that city derived its name. Probably no other relic of prehistoric origin has attracted a wide study of archaeologists as the Grave Creek Mound, which has given up skeletons of the ancients who constructed it. Some years ago, archaeologists investigating the mound dug out a skeleton said to be that of a female because of the formation of the bones, and most likely that would be the hip bones that they're looking at. The skeleton was 7 foot 4 inches tall, and the jawbone would easily fit over the face of a man weighing 160 pounds. I want to note something right now. I probably have 50 different newspaper articles in my possession talking about giants across North America. Where we were at also in Arkansas, and we were looking for the remnants of a female giant that was supposedly exhumed and was approximately 7 foot 4 inches. I have noted that height, 7 foot 4 inches, seems to be a consistent height with the giant race. Now, this right here in the Moundsville Mound Park is of a female giant, supposedly, that was also 7 foot 4 inches. So, it makes me wonder then, were the female giants approximately 7 foot 4 and the men much taller? As in today, men are typically much taller and larger in size than most women. Of course, you have abnormalities here and there, but for the most part, men are typically larger than women are. I wonder if this holds true with the giant race that keeps being uncovered. Now, what this reminds me of is something that's called sexual dimorphism. Sexual dimorphism is the systematic difference in form between individuals of different sex in the same species. For example, in some species, including many mammals, the male is larger than the female, especially within the primate category. In others, such as some spiders, the female is always larger than the male. So, could sexual dimorphism explain why we always have an inconsistent variety of skeletal size that's being uncovered? Like I said, I do find it interesting the enormous weight of evidence of skeletal remains that are always 7 to 7.5 foot, and then the others that are much larger. And I mean much larger as to the extent that some of the articles that I have, especially one that is posted over in Europe, where the giant skeletal remains were up to 9 foot or sometimes 10 foot. Now, that is quite big. However, it does happen naturally within the mammalian species. So, could that be an answer? I don't know. That's my best guess. Once again, I'm just a nerd for history, so I do my best to research stuff like this. Here, let's continue with this article. We're running out of time. In June 1930, the Clarksburg Sunday Exponent reported, quote, "Interesting and valuable evidence of a race of gigantic people who inhabited this section of West Virginia more than 1,000 years ago have been exhumed from two nearly explored mounds located near Morgansville, which is on the northwestern turnpike about 12 miles west of Salem. The particular tribe, or race, which inhabited this section of the state is believed to have been composed of individuals ranging from 7 to 9 feet in height, and is thought that they were the Siouan Indians. The best preserved skeleton found at Morgansville was in a clay encasement, and all of the vertebrae and other bones, excepting the skull, were saved without much crumbling. Careful measurement of the skeletons proved that the Indians were about 7 feet 6 inches tall. Once again, there's that strange number, 7.5 feet. This was in response to a professor named Ernest Sutton, who was the head of the geography department at Salem College, having excavated 2 mounds in the Doddridge County, in which he uncovered 4 different skeletons. The most recent discovery of these giants was made in 1959, when Dr. Donald Dregu, the curator of the section of man at the Carnegie Museum, excavated the Cresap Mound in Marshall County. There, he unearthed a 7-foot-2-inch skeleton. Now, tales of colossal giants permeate American history, not only in West Virginia, but across the continent. These many finds in America and the rest of the world support the idea that giants once walked on the earth centuries ago and are more than just mythological beings. So, what have we learned today, class? We've learned that prior to 1960, so far in my research, all right, prior to 1960, archaeologists, anthropologists were constantly out in the field. They were digging, they were exhuming bodies from mounds, and they were uncovering giant skeletons. Now, if I'm correct when I state this, the average Native American male was typically not over 6 foot tall. Even back in the predated times, Vikings are always thought of as these gigantic men, these monstrous giants. However, the average Scandinavian man was only 5'7". So, back in those times, people were much shorter. If you ever travel to Europe and you ever go through any of the castles, you will find a very interesting artifact every time you walk into the room. And that artifact is the doorway. The average doorway for the average castle, the average stick-built or stone-built home, was presumably about 6 foot tall. Maybe a little bit more. But not like they are currently, where your average door is about 7 foot high. So, what is the difference with prehistory and man being much shorter, but yet this enormous amount of evidence of giants throughout the lands? There's something here we're not being told. This is history being uncovered for a reason. It's our job to get back in the field and to dig it out. That's what I'm doing now. My first adventure in the field, we were in Arkansas looking for artifacts of giants. And I'm not going to tell you exactly what all we found because we're not done yet. But we found artifacts and we will be going back. If you want to donate to our cause, if you want to help to fund these little expeditions so that we can bring more of these things to light, because I'm still working on the editing because I am partially a technical idiot. I do not understand the technology. I bought Adobe Premiere Pro, which is like $800 a year, and I barely even know how to load a video on it. So this learning process is quite hard. But here, hopefully today, if not, then by tomorrow, I will have at least one video of the first cave on the YouTube channel. This podcast will also be on the YouTube channel, and I'm going to share in it several of the documents that I have of the articles about the giants. I'll have them slowed down long enough for you to be able to read them. I find them to be extraordinary. And I want you to be able to share this and show others that there is still history out there to be uncovered, guys. So if you want to help donate, you can go to theamericanvindictusshow.com. We have a donate button on there. If you don't want to use the donate button, we do also have a postal box address that's on there. You know, it makes me feel bad when I ask for donations because typically that's not me. That's not the type of person I am. But at this point in time, we live upon tithes, donations, and maybe a little bit of extra money from sponsorship. And, you know, you guys are all dealing with the same thing I am with gas. And the gas, the hotel rooms, that stuff costs a lot of money. And, you know, if I could do this for free, guys, I would probably never come out of a cave or the field. But we have to be able to fund what we're doing. So if you would like to donate, please donate. We do very much appreciate it. That's all I got for you today, guys. I hope what I have discussed with you today motivates you to get off of your excuses, get out, go have an adventure, go have some fun, get off the TV, get off your phone, get outside, breathe some fresh air, go explore, and have fun. That's an order. All right, guys, I love you all, and in the name of God, please be careful out there. Stay frosty. The enemy is out there. My name's Doug Thornton. You've been listening to American Vindicta. See you tomorrow. All stations, all call signs. Prepare for transmission. This is Wrecker Actual. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine. I will repay, saith the Lord. End of transmission.